Joshua would have echoed all those words, as we will see today from our study. We're continuing today our study of Joshua, the book of Joshua. Last week we saw in chapter 9, first of all, how the Gibeonites, who were a big city, Gibeon, in the clan or the tribe of the Hittites, the nation of the Hittites, how he lied to the Israelite leadership. How he conned them, because they were scared of the Israelites and what they might do to them. We thought about that on Wednesday as well in our studies then. Secondly, the Israelite leaders kept their oath to keep them safe because they had made that oath in God's name, and therefore they felt they couldn't break it. Thirdly, they had become slaves and servants of the Israelites. They cut the wood and carried the water, if you remember, for the people and to the sanctuary, to the temple. And fourthly, they were exposed to the worship of God, which was, for them, a heathen nation, an exposure to the one true God. So we come to the study of what should be Joshua 10 to 12. When I read 10 to 12, I decided that I would focus on the first 14 verses, because the rest of chapter 10, chapter 11 and chapter 12 is a bloodbath. But the background to that is Deuteronomy. And in Deuteronomy 20, Moses said, giving God's words, "As for the towns of the nations, the Lord your God is giving you as a special possession, destroy every living thing in them. You must completely destroy the Hittites," okay, where the Gibeonites came from, "Amorites, Canaanites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites, just as the Lord your God has commanded you. They will keep the people of the land from teaching you their detestable customs." Sorry, "This will keep the people of the land from teaching you their detestable customs in the worship of their gods, which would cause you to sin deeply against the Lord your God." So it was part of God's plan. And though it seems a bloodbath, please feel free to read it when you get home, it is all about those nations succumbing to the Israelites, as God had told Moses. So I've entitled today's sermon, "Help, I Need Somebody." Anybody recognize that phrase?
Yes.
How old are you?
Too old.
Too old, yes. A Beatles song, yes? "Help, I Need Somebody." We come to Joshua 10 and we read these first five verses. The Gibeonites are in danger. Adonai Zedek, king of Jerusalem, heard that Joshua had captured and completely destroyed Ai and killed its king, just as he had destroyed the town of Jericho and killed its king. He also learned that the Gibeonites had made peace with Israel and were now their allies. He and his people became very afraid when they heard all this, because Gibeon was a large town, as large as the royal cities and larger than Ai. And the Gibeonite men were strong warriors. So Adonizedek of Jerusalem sent messengers to several other kings. Hoham of Hebron, great name, isn't it? Hoham of Hebron, Piram of Jarmuth, Japhia of Lashik, and Deber of Eglon. "Come and help me destroy Gibeon," he urged them, "for they have made peace with Joshua and the people of Israel." So these five Amorite kings combined their armies for a united attack. They moved all their troops into place and attacked Gibeon. Danger. The Gibeonites, now with his peace treaty with Joshua and the Israelites, now are under attack, as it said in verse 5. The king of Jerusalem is worried about the peace treaty. Not just worried about the Israelites, he's worried about the fact that the Gibeonites are now on their side. And as it said, they were strong warriors. So he gets the other four Amorite kings together so that they can combine their army and move forward and attack Gibeon. Help us, we have a treaty, verses 6 and 7. The men of Gibeon quickly sent messengers to Joshua at his camp in Gilgal. Don't abandon your servants now, they pleaded. Come at once, save us, help us. For all the Amorite kings who live in the hill country have joined forces to attack us. Quickly sent messengers to Joshua. Don't abandon us, come quickly and help us. The situation is dire. We need some help. So what happens in verse 7, so Joshua and his entire army, including his best warriors, left Gilgal and set out for Gibeon. They responded. There was a need, and they responded to the need of the Gibeonites. What does God have to say to Joshua? Do not be afraid of them, the Lord said to Joshua, for I have given you victory over them. Not a single one of them will be able to stand up to you. Wow, what a promise. Okay? Do not be afraid of them, the Lord said to Joshua, for I have given you victory over them. Not a single, all five nations, all five kings and their armies from all these places are going to come against you. Don't be afraid of them. I've given you victory over them. Not a single one of them will be able to stand up to you. Trust me, Joshua, he says. Do not be afraid. I will give you victory. So we read on, verses 9 to 11. Joshua traveled all night from Gilgal and took the Amorite armies by surprise. The Lord threw them into a panic, and the Israelites slaughtered great numbers of them at Gibeon. Then the Israelites chased the enemy along the road to Beth Horon, killing them all along the way to Azekah and Makkedah. As the Amorites retreated down the road from Beth Horon, the Lord destroyed them with a terrible hailstone from heaven that continued until they reached Azekah. The hail killed more of the enemy than the Israelites killed with the sword. That's interesting, isn't it? Okay. I've got in my mind something bigger than golf balls coming down. All right? You know, sometimes we've seen really bad hailstones. And I think we've seen some in America which have been horrendous. You see the things bouncing in Texas, bouncing off the road. And if this were killing people, then you can only get an idea of how big these hailstones were. God said, trust me, Joshua. You go in, you fight them, you chase them, but I'm now going to come in and I'm going to pour these hailstones on them, and more were healed from the hail than were killed by the Israelites with the sword. He seems to have travelled at night so that he could attack in the day. I don't know whether that was under the cover of darkness, it was very dark, the moon wasn't there, or it was moonlight and he could see where he was going. But obviously the Israelites with Joshua moving their army towards these people, towards Gibeon, and it would have been a difficult thing to do at night. So he was guided to do it at night from Gilgal and took the Amorite armies by surprise. They were thrown into a panic. Probably they didn't expect first thing in the morning to see these armies coming towards them. They weren't prepared. You can imagine they hadn't had their porridge. They weren't ready to take on the Israelite army. Killed larger numbers and then chased, and the hailstones killed more than they killed. And then we come to verse 12. On the day the Lord gave the Israelites victory over the Amorites, Joshua prayed to the Lord in front of all the people of Israel. He said, let the sun stand still over Gibeon, and the moon over the valley of Ajalon. Whoa. I entitled that a very odd prayer. This guy, Joshua, had great faith in God to pray a prayer like that. Effectively, I want time to stand still. Now, I looked at some of the commentaries and they're all very confused as to what that means. But I think simply, from what I can gather, it means, will we have daylight until we finish and accomplish this task? Right? We don't want night to come. We want to do this deed, getting rid of these attacking forces in the daylight. So don't let the sun go down and don't let the moon come up, please God. Right? How brave are we in our prayers? Verses 13 to 14. So the sun stood still and the moon stayed in place until the nation of Israel had defeated its enemies. God didn't say what. He did what he was asked. Is this event not recorded in the book of Jashar? The sun stayed in the middle of the sky, and it did not set as on a normal day. There has never been a day like this one before or since when the Lord answers such a prayer. Surely the Lord fought for Israel that day. An eclipse. All kinds of arguments come up about what that might be. But he prayed that prayer for a specific reason. And God did answer the way he had asked. Answered prayer. God listened and he acted as Joshua requested. I wonder what was in the mind of Joshua. I wonder how much he said that in faith. I can't believe he prayed that prayer not believing that God could do it. God had told him, don't be afraid. I will give you victory. No one can stand against you. So he claimed that promise and he prayed that amazing prayer. A unique response, verse 14 tells us, a unique response from God to man. Never been a day like this one before or since when the Lord answered such a prayer. Sure, the Lord fought for Israel that day. And in verse 15, we read that Joshua and his army returned to their camp at Gilgal. The armies have been defeated. God's people are secure. The people, the Gibeonites, are secure. What was attempted has been accomplished. And God has been in action. So what lessons can we learn? What can we learn from this story? A very obvious one, first of all, we cannot cope on our own. Whether it's small issues or big issues, we need help. We need help from God, we sometimes need help from other Christians, but we certainly need God's help. Sometimes that comes through other Christians. We need help from God. Immediately here they were asked for help, God speaks to Joshua and reassures him. Right? Joshua's looking for an answer from God. He remembered what had happened to Ai, where he'd done his own thing and thought he could cope with the small issue of the people of Ai, which was only a small place. He'd learned his lesson and he turned to God. We need the help from God in our small and big issues. I wonder if you're like me that thinks, well, I won't bother God with that, it's too small. Or am I alone in that? I'm sure I'm not. God wants to be involved in our whole lives, both the big things and the small things. God stands in our place the same way that the Israelites stood up for the Gibeonites. Israelite army was standing there on behalf of the Gibeonites. It was Gibeon that was being attacked. And so we are reminded that God stands in our place. He stands in front of us. He surrounds us. We sung this afternoon about God being a fortress. A picture of a fortress, a castle fortress, where we are safe. Because God's standing there for us. Thirdly, no prayer is too big for our God. We can cross the Jordan. We can take Jericho. We can take Ai. We can have hailstones killing people. We can have the sun and the moon that are frozen in the sky. That should be a great encouragement to each one of us. God can do anything. How often we quote that phrase, nothing is impossible for God. Joshua proved it in this passage. Nothing is impossible for God. God stands for us, fourthly, because we have made a peace treaty with him. Just as the Gibeonites made a peace treaty with the Israelites, so God has made a peace treaty with us. We have repented of our sin. We have accepted Christ and been accepted by God and forgiven. And we have redemption through the blood of Christ because of the cross. So four lessons there for us to pick up from this story. We can't cope on our own, small or big. We need God. God stands in our place the same way the Israelites stood up for the Gibeonites. God stood in front of Israel. No prayer is too big for our God. I wonder what's going on in your life at the moment, what you're worried about, what you're struggling with. The ups and downs of life come across us all. Are you praying the big prayers? Or are you frightened to pray it because you just think, that's not possible for that to happen? Are you thinking humanly, or are you thinking in a godly manner that nothing is impossible for God? And let's remember above all that we have a peace treaty with God. We are not enemies of God, as Ruth said earlier. We are children of God. God loves us because he died for us and we have responded to him in his grace and his mercy. He has accepted us. We have that redemption. We are a redeemed people because of the cross. We're going to remember that as we move through to communion in a few moments' time. Not only is God for us, but we're going to sing later on, "The Lord is by my side," okay, which they would have known. But before that, we focus on communion as we stand to sing "How Deep the Father's Love for Us."